Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Let's hit the guest line, Taz, shall we? Let's welcome aboard Rajah Bell, 12-year NBA veteran, really good player. Now, Cannell and Bell podcast, uber successful, does a fantastic job there. Hey, Rajah, Taz and the Moose with you. Thanks for a couple minutes this morning.
Hey, thanks for having me, fellas.
Yeah, you got it. Let's start here with what we witnessed last night. What do you, the play of LeBron last night, Rajah, what did you read? Everyone's going to look at him being tired, worn down, fatigued, however you describe it. What was your take on what we saw from James last night up in Beantown?
You can make a case for him being tired. He's had to do a lot of heavy lifting this offseason, more so than he's done in a while. I think if I'm reading it, I think he was conserving his energy more so than being tired. He has to know at this point that with that supporting cast on the road in Boston, just having won two in a row, that the odds are heavily stacked against. So coming out early, it didn't look like his team had the chops to go in there and win. And so, you know, a guy at that age, he's fully aware of the fact that he doesn't have the best legs on one night's rest, and he's going to have to do that twice now. So I saw at some point in the game it looked like LeBron made the conscious decision to not chase the game, if you will. I'm sure if it was within striking distance and they could win it, he was going to go after it. But I think he realized that he wasn't getting the support that he needed.
So, Rajah, let's talk about Jason Tatum, man, how he's just just evolved here in these playoffs. Has almost kind of just maturing in front of our eyes, right? As guys and girls that are watching the game, break him down, man. Talk about Jason Tatum. I'd love to hear your thoughts.
I really loved Jason Tatum in the draft. I thought that he was the number one pick last year. I kind of got laughed at it with the show I was on at the time because of it, but only because his skill set is so well-rounded. I mean, he's a perimeter 6'8 guy who can score on three levels. I mean, he's got a nice pull-up game. He can get you moving off the bounce. He's got a real bag, if you will, in terms of what he can do with his moves. It gets you back up, and then he can get up in the air vertically for the jump shot. He's also a very proficient three-point shooter, which you have to be. And that kind of draws the defender out to you and allows you to use that bounce a little bit. And then, you know, at his size and his frame coming in as a freshman, you don't see guys that finish around the rim with the type of, like, ferociousness that he does, but he's a finisher. So when he gets you to the cup, I mean, he likes to pipe it. Like, he doesn't go in there to lay it up soft. He takes it to the rack hard. He's going through chest. So I really liked all the skill set in and of itself is really, really diversified and well-rounded for the NBA. But the mentality on top of it, where he's just out for bodies. Like, he's not the type of guy that's trying to fit in and figure out his way around the locker room, or, you know, he's a good teammate, don't get me wrong, but he's there to put his wares on display, and he's there to win games. And so that type of mentality, when you're not afraid of the moment, you're not afraid of the shot, even though you're a rook, you're not afraid to put the team on your back at times and carry them, you couple that with the skill set, and he's a problem.
I'm curious, when you look at it, Rajah, the amount of credit that Brad Stevens has gotten up in Beantown for the job that he has done, has it been too much?
I don't think it's been too much. I mean, the jury's still out on Brad in terms of, you know, we judge, you know, legacies, coaching, and players in terms of championships. I do think Brad is one of the best coaches in the NBA right now. You know, X's and O's, we could go through those, you know, and debate what you know, who's got better X's and O's. But when I watch his team and I watch how engaged they are, and I watch how, I forget the stat right now, but I think they led the NBA in, like, double-digit comebacks this year. I mean, that means they don't quit, right? That's not the type of team that folds. And in today's NBA, you see a lot of guys or a lot of teams quit. I mean, you win or you lose by 30, it seems like, every night. Those teams don't quit. They've been through, you know, the whole emotional roller coaster ride of Gordon Hayward being injured in the first couple minutes of the season. They exceeded expectations, and Kyrie goes down before the playoffs. Again, any other team without a megastar would have maybe folded 10. He gets guys to buy in to what he's preaching and the way they have to win, despite who he's got on the court. And then I got to give a lot of credit to his staff, because what they do is not only does Danny Ainge and Brad Stevens, they don't seem to always get it right. I mean, in the draft, they do get it right in the draft, but then they get these kids and they develop the heck out of them. So no matter who he plugs in there, you know, these guys are able to go out there and do a good enough job to be winning in the Eastern Conference Championship Series right now. And so I give Brad Stevens a ton of credit. The jury would still be out because he's relatively young as a coach, but I think he's one of the best coaches in the game right now.
Well, yeah, no argument for me on that. Almost we talk about that a lot with Stevens. He's a great communicator, a great coach. Now, speaking of coaches, sticking to that, man, hey, what about Ty Lue last night? I mean, we were talking earlier, Moose and I, about the whole Kyle Korver deal where, you know, we felt like Ty Lue's got to get this guy more minutes. He was more concerned with the matchup, though.
Yeah, that was interesting. I watched Kyle. Kyle had a good, I guess, game three and a good enough game four. And I don't think, if I'm not mistaken, he didn't play in the first quarter. I don't think he brought him in until the second quarter of the game. You know, sometimes as a coach, you could get wrapped up and overthink things. Like, on the road in Boston, you've had very few guys in that series who have made shots. Kyle Korver, if nothing else, is a shot maker. And he showed a grit to him defensively that I haven't seen in a while in Cleveland. And so I agree. I thought he should have been on the court. Even if it didn't work, you throw him out there and you see what it looks like, right? He's one of the guys who's helped you make shots and space the floor and get LeBron some avenues to the basket. You had Kevin Love already making shots at the first quarter. So putting another guy out there that could space the floor, maybe you got LeBron sledding downhill and he got engaged with the game and it could have been a different outcome. But, you know, coaching is it's specifically there in Cleveland because you are held accountable by a lot of people. I mean, not just the staff, but ownership is heavily involved. LeBron and his camp are heavily involved. And Ty Lue came out and said it a few years ago about that being a very, very difficult job. And he kind of got, you know, he kind of got laughed at because he had LeBron and Kyrie. But that is a very, very tough job. I was with the Cavs for a year in their front office. He does a good job, but that is a very hard job.
We're talking to Rajah Bell, 12-year NBA vet. And now Cannell and Bell podcast does a great job. Rajah, is this – before we move out west, you got a big Game 5 down in Houston tonight. Eastern Conference, is this a 7-game series?
Yeah, I believe it's a 7-game series, but I you know, for it to be an entertaining 7-game series, they've really got to figure out how they can manage LeBron in Game 6. And that's going to be predicated on what you get from the role players at home. They've been night and day in Cleveland and in Boston, but I say that to say that now it's a one-day rest series the rest of the way, so you're not going to be able to get LeBron 2 days rest. You got to figure out how you can manage him in Game 6 at home to where it feels like he's going to get 2 days rest. He cannot roll out there and play 45, 46 minutes and have to do all the heavy lifting, or he's going to be shot for Game 7.
Raja, Taz and I, we've discussed it because we've been frustrated. We both like the NBA, obviously, both huge fans of the playoffs, great teams, great players. Games have been terrible, Raja. I mean, they've been a lot of these games have been non-competitive. We've had really one great game, and that was the last game, Game 4 out west. Why do you think these games have been one blowout, double-digit victory after another?
Well, I mean, it's a tough question. I think it's twofold. The three-point shot and the reliance on it, it makes for big, huge swings and score. So if you're making threes and the other team's not making threes, I mean, you're not adding two every time, you're adding three. And so just simple multiplication means it's going to be a bigger gap. And so there's some of that going on. And then I think you see teams, you know, like the LeBron, I think people start to realize now with that one day's rest, chasing games that are out of hand sometimes aren't worth it. And it's kind of like it's like what we started to see with Pop. You know, I think Pop and the Spurs were on the forefront of the trend of, like, resting guys during the regular season, not chasing, you know, wins during the regular season. You know, this is a conspiracy. I don't know this to be a fact, but it looks to me at times that when these games are getting out of hand, guys that are a little longer in the tooth that understand that this could be a 7-game series, they don't chase it the same way that a younger Boston team can chase it. The Boston team can afford to chase it. Those guys, there's not going to be a lingering effect from Game 6 to Game 7. Those legs are fresh. They've only played 3 years in the NBA. Like, they haven't played through June for the last decade. You know, those things change when you get older. And so I see guys starting to shut it down a little earlier and preparing for the next game.
Hey, so, Roger, let me ask you, man. Did James Harden, did he turn the corner with his Game 4 performance? What do you think?
I hope he did. I mean, that would make for a really good series out west too. There was one play in that game. It was early in game three, in game four, and Reggie Miller even said it on the broadcast. James Harden had towed up a three. He was on the break. He was wide open. It was a 3-on-1, and he swung it across court. I mean, there was no reason in the world he shouldn't have shot that.
I ripped him for that. Yeah, I thought he froze. I don't know why did he do that?
He did. He looked like a robot. Everything just shut down for a second. And right there, I was like, this could be a problem. Like, that could be the moment that reverts him back to what was happening before. But he overcame it, and he had a really good game. I don't think they played great offensively, but here's what I'll say to that. James Harden is the best. He is one of the two best one-on-one players or three best one-on-one players in the world. Kevin Durant happens to be one of the other ones. If Golden State allows themselves to fall into the rhythm of playing one-on-one, because they have really good one-on-one players in Durant and Steph Curry. I don't believe Klay to be a great one-on-one guy, but they've got two that can do it with the best of them. You're not going to be Houston doing that. There's a fine line between what Golden State really loves to do, which is move that ball, move people, and then get into a quick one-on-one, and what Houston does, which is straight iso ball. And I feel like Golden State at times falls into Houston lulls them into playing the way Houston wants to play.
Yeah, and they can't do that. I mean, because if Houston can't play Golden State style and Golden State can't be iso ball, because you're right, sharing the basketball, Raja. So that leads you – I mean, that is a huge – I think a lot of people were stunned by the comeback victory of Houston in Game 4, especially after what you saw from Steph in the third quarter, and they got doubled up 34-17 in that Game 4 to have the rally that they did on the road in Golden State, who had won 16 straight home games. What do we expect tonight, and how does the rest of the series play out?
Yeah, if you're a Houston fan, you got to win this game. Like, you cannot afford to go down 2-3 and then go back to Oracle. I would expect tonight, I think Houston wins tonight. I picked Houston to win the series, partly because I'm a Mike D'Antoni guy, but I felt like when I was with the Suns, for instance, and forgive me because I'm going to get off track, but when I was with the Suns, we always felt like, yes, we wanted to push and turn the game into an up-tempo game, and most people wanted to slow us down. But naturally, people want to run. They want to get up and down. So it was going to be easier for us to lull you into the type of game that we wanted to play. And I kind of feel the same way about Mike's Houston team. Because Golden State has enough high-level guys to play one-on-one, and you can get Kevin Durant scoring 38 whenever he wants, he's going to fall into playing one-on-one sometimes, unless someone there can communicate and they can stick to game plan. I think it's easier for them to fall into the way Houston wants to play. I think tonight will be another good game. I think that Houston will have role players. That P.J. Tucker played great last game, although he didn't score. I thought Eric Gordon was okay, but he only had 14. They didn't shoot the ball particularly well from the three-point line, and they still found a way to win in Golden State. A team that's that good offensively, I think they bounce back at home. Golden State will play better as well. I think Houston is going to have a really, really good offensive performance at home tonight.
Houston wins tonight, Golden State wins game 6 at home, and then we're coming back to Houston for a game 7, right?
And then we're coming back to Houston for a game 7. And if I were a betting man, this would not be with my heart. This would just be, like, if I had to bet it, I would say that Golden State pulls it out just because of the experience. That's another hurdle that I imagine James Harden and Chris Paul will have to clear mentally.
You know, Raja, we appreciate all the time this morning. We'll close it out here. It's a little bit about the NBA, but overall, because we've chatted a lot this morning about I'm sure you've discussed it as well, the NFL and their national anthem policy. We talked about with callers earlier, and we had a couple of callers bring up, the NBA has handled it properly. Why do you think there's such the difference between the NBA Adam Silver and certainly handling players' protests and trying to bring about social change and activism as compared to the National Football League?
It's an interesting question. I think the NBA, the NBA has been less of an iron fist type of league than the NFL has been. I mean, you have, all the way from the very nature of contracts, being very player friendly and being guaranteed. In the NFL, you're basically fighting for your life every minute. So you're used to kind of being dictated to, I imagine, in the NFL. In the NBA, it's just been more of a two-way street, even as far back as David Stern. More so, I believe, now with Adam Silver, though, there's a line of communication. Like, there's a channel of communication between the players and the league offices, and there's a mutual, you know, there's a mutual benefit to them coming.
Well, yeah,
up
the player, solution. the players like Silva, and the NFL players can't stand Goodell.
Correct. And so when you've got people that like each other and they understand that a win for everybody helps us all, they figure it out a little bit better. And you know, I never played in the NFL. I love the NBA. I think the NBA is more progressive in terms of its thinking and connecting with today's, you know, generations. And so I think the NBA tends to get it right a little bit more often with things like that than the NFL.
Raja Bell, 12-year NBA vet. Check him out. Cannell and Bell podcast does a great job. Hey, Raja, we appreciate the time this morning. We really do, and hopefully we'll get to do it again real soon.
Thanks for having me, folks.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.